Well, hey there, family. It seems some of y'all aren't terribly offended by the sound of my voice, as we've had a couple requests to hear more from me. While I can't claim to possess narration skills remotely on par with our dear narrator, I thought I'd try my hand at an episode of Cam Reads for our Patreon family. Steve has previously read for y'all from Backwoods Witchcraft by a friend of the show, Jake Richards. Today, I'm going to read from Chapter 3 of Jake's newest book, Doctoring the Devil. Chapter 3, Red Roots. In this chapter, we will see many fantastic things and meet people of this region. There were too many recorded tales of Appalachian workers to include here, so I chose those stories that demonstrate methods and practices of a similar manner as those employed and generally seen in the Appalachian regions both north and south. We will also see how the lines often cross between conjurer, yarb doctor, and faith healer in the tales that follow. The Red Fox of the Mountains. I think the most fitting one we should meet first is the well-known Marshall Benton Taylor of Wise County, Virginia, the dreaded Red Fox of the Mountains. Before we get into this story, I want you to keep in mind that back in his day, law enforcement wasn't as strong as it is today. It didn't have the same reach or capability of physically and readily bringing someone to justice, so some folks took it upon themselves to search out wrongdoers and administer justice outside the formal system. Marshall Red Fox Taylor was born in Scott County on May 8, 1836. Folks all around these parts were terrified of him because he was slicker than a fox and had many a man captured and brought to justice. He was a revenue agent, United States Marshal, herb doctor, spiritualist, preacher, and faith healer. He has been described as having a kind, compassionate look on one side of his face and a snarl on the other side, with a twinkle in his eye that told you he was already way ahead of you. Folks said that while tracking outlaws, he would hide in the woods on the mountain trails. He'd also cut off the soles of his shoes and reverse them so that it appeared that wherever he went, his footprints showed him going the other way. Some fellas would brag about seeing him and scaring him, trying to tear his name down. One man did so and was walking home one night when he saw out of the corner of his eye the Red Fox was walking beside him. He hadn't heard Red Fox come up, and he never said a word, just gave him a look as if to say, "Watch it." Outlaws would run like hell if they ever found that Red Fox was on their trail because his success rate was basically 100%. Either dead or alive, they were brought in. Red Fox studied medicine with his uncle at a time when there weren't any colleges around, so he was book-learned and a faith healer. He often prescribed charms along with herbs to enact a cure and would tell folks to sit and pray while he went outside, where he would stand with arms open to the sky, and if they felt a warm feeling taking over, to call his name. After this, they would be cured of whatever ailed them. It's said he always carried a bag on his saddle filled with herbs that he used to conjure and cure right alongside his guns. He was also a preacher and spoke often of visions. It's said those aided him in his hunts. He would preach to just about any person or crowd that would have him. But aside from preaching and curing, he is most famous as an assassin, his legendary name having been born at Killing Rock, where he killed an infamous moonshiner by the name of Ira Mullins due to a personal vendetta between the two. For this, Red Fox was set to be hung, but not before he preached at his own funeral to hundreds in attendance from all over southwestern Virginia. With the Red Fox, his faith was the closest thing to him. In his trial, the judge asked if he had anyone to testify on his behalf. His response was, "Jesus Christ!" He then proceeded to preach, a foreshadowing of sorts that he would also preach at his own hanging, to which he requested to be dressed in solid white. He also claimed that he would rise from the dead 3 days after burial. In the courtroom, he prayed versus showing his own innocence beneath the just judge and also preached damnation to his enemies, who seemingly all died shortly after his own quote-unquote death. Some rumors persist that he didn't die that day, but rather walked out in the company of some Freemason brothers, after which he skipped out to Missouri, while others say he's buried in an unmarked grave in Wise County. He was a madman, to say the least, never admitting guilt for the massacre that resulted from his personal vengeance. His body never rose, but folks say the Red Fox of the Mountains is still out there, healing and tricking and praying in the spirit. Mammy Wise. Mammy Wise, or Weiss, saw many things. She resided along the Upper Tennessee-North Carolina border in the late 1800s near Washington and Carter counties in Tennessee, presently known as Unicoi County. She was tall and heavyset, with long, coarse black hair that looked and felt like hemp rope. She had small dark eyes and was, quote, dark as an Injun, which may have been on account of Melungeon heritage with Indian blood. She cured a multitude of things, including thrush and colic, and her abilities were attributed to the fact that her father died before she was born. While there are some theories that she may have also been a seventh daughter, it is this one fact that seems to be the reason she was able to cure or see. A person who had never met their father could cure thrush or colic by blowing in the child's mouth, among other abilities, including the sight. But she not only healed and saw visions, she saw what caused the ailments as well. She foretold the coming of the Civil War. She said this vision happened when she saw the night sky filled with stars, but a bright star in the north fell and clashed with a bright star in the south, which she interpreted as a war between the north and the south. Just before the war, an omen visited the heavens in 1861, known as a hairy star, or war comet. Beyond everything she saw and told, this is the fuel of her southern fame to this day. Aside from this, she also found out thieves. One story goes that a woman's prized jewel necklace had been stolen, so she traveled across the state to meet with Mammy. Mammy got the names of suspects, the usual troublemakers in the community the woman lived in, on a piece of paper and placed it snug at the bottom of a pot of boiling water, into which she dropped 3 dead crawfish. After saying her enchantments over the boiling brew, the breasts of the crawfish opened up and whizzed a name on the list. In another tale, a family by the name of Johnson took residence along the Davidson River, and the man of the home soon sent for Mammy due to the gravel. He had kidney stones. When Mammy arrived, it came to her attention that they had hosted a man named Carson who was traveling around. However, Carson returned after finding a large sum of his money missing. Wise divined that Mr. Johnson was the thief, and this was the cause of his ailment, an example of sin making you sick. She was also the person folks would go to for love potions she would brew up in her kitchen. She'd send them on with a bottle of it and swear they shouldn't let it leave their hands until they got home, otherwise the spirits would fly back home to her. Witch Magaha. One of the prime examples of a moody cursing witch in Appalachia is Witch Magaha of the Great Smoky Mountains. What is now Great Smoky Mountains National Park used to be a herd of small communities that no longer exist since the park was set and folks were made to move. Residing near here was Witch Magaha, also known as Squad Magaha, whom neighbors disliked because she was constantly asking to borrow things from everyone, yet she wouldn't let anyone borrow anything from her. Sound familiar? It's said she didn't do without, but for some mysterious reason she needed to borrow things. One fall, her sister Nance asked to get some apples from her orchard, but Magaha refused and shooed her away. Nance thought it wise to sneak through and get some apples, but Witch Magaha found her and cursed her, sending devils in the form of squirrels after her. Nance noticed a pulling at her dress and saw it was a squirrel. Then another tug, and another. Each time she turned around, the number of squirrels had doubled. She began to run, but no matter how fast she ran, the squirrels kept scratching and tormenting her until she was a bloody mess. She tried her best to get across the threshold of her doorway at her home, where a broom was laid across to keep out evil, but she died on her porch. The Powell Sisters. One of my favorite tales growing up was of Irene and Drusilla Powell of Scott County, Virginia, who lived between present-day Hiltons, Virginia, and Bloomingdale, Tennessee, some 200 years ago. Growing up, they were always getting into trouble, but it wasn't until they were older that things got worse and bloody. Everyone was afraid of them. Bootleggers, outlaws, everybody in town. Irene and Drusilla were inseparable. Even after they both married and had children, they would go off together to somewhere nobody knew. Before the bad things began happening everywhere they went, Irene and Drusilla were both trained and effective midwives. Besides their cures and aid, folks also went to them for charms to gain love or luck. After a while of this is when the bad things started happening. See, the Powell sisters' magic seemed to be a paradox where something was given but something was taken as well. A woman would gain the affections of her lover but would become infertile or lose her hair. A man would win every game of chance, but the luckier he got, the worse his health became. Everywhere the sisters went, folks argued, things fell or broke and people got sick. Cows caught ill and crops withered. Soon the few hours they stole away grew longer and longer until they were gone for days and weeks at a time. It's said they abused their children and tormented their husbands' minds with all kinds of crazy until their folks got fed up and told them to just stay gone for good. So they did. Isolated in the mountains, far away from everyone, the only time the sisters came into town was when they needed something. But now 12 or 13 stray dogs that they had taken in followed right on their heels. Hunters in town swore the animals were demons in disguise and that the Powell sisters would sometimes have unnatural relations with them to keep the devil's bidding up. One day, everything changed when Drusilla went to the well to get water while Irene was out. The dogs turned on her and tore her to shreds. Supposedly, this was the payment for their powers, an end to their contract of sorts. When Irene came home and found her sister in pieces, she hung herself from a tree. The folks who found them buried their corpses outside McMurray Cemetery, beyond the bounds of hallowed ground. Since then, there have been stories that you can sometimes hear them screaming and beating at the tops of their coffins, with the occasional song of a stressed rope coming from a nearby tree. The dogs, on the other hand, never returned. The Oak Ridge Prophet. Born November 9, 1865 in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, John Hendricks is known today as a prophet and mystic whose predictions were scarily accurate. He was married to Julia Ann Griffith, and they had four children. After their daughter Ethel died of a strange infection in the nose and throat, Julia blamed John for causing the sickness because he had whooped Ethel over something before she got sick. Soon after, John was deserted by his wife and kids, who took off to Arkansas. Heartbroken, John turned to religion and mysticism. He slept on the ground in the woods for 40 days, believing that God would talk to him there. This is when his visions began. He announced his visions and prophecy to his neighbors, but they all deemed him crazy and out of his head. John predicted that his hometown would soon have huge buildings and big engines building something, and it would all be to help stop the biggest war in history. He even gave specific locations of routes and railroads, which all turned out to be true. He spoke of Oak Ridge, the establishment that played a major role in the development of the atomic bomb and aided the Allies during World War II. John Hendricks wasn't a witch or a conjurer, but a seer, somebody who can see and hear the word of God and spirit. He died of tuberculosis on June 2, 1915. And that's about where we'll wrap it up today, family. Thanks for joining me for Cam Reads. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, that book again is Doctoring the Devil, Notebooks of an Appalachian Conjure Man by Jake Richards. You can find it on Amazon or anywhere you purchase quality reading materials. Jake has been practicing Appalachian folk magic for about a decade and teaches classes on the subject nearby me in Jonesboro, Tennessee, where he owns Little Chicago Conjure. And I'll drop some links for his socials in the description for this episode. Y'all have a good evening.